a collective danger. And it is, I've come to believe, literally too much for a single individual consciousness to try to take in. And that's much more than saying, well, that'll be make you so uncomfortable and you'll cry and you'll gnash your teeth and tear your hair. It's not, it is literally almost too much. We need each other. And it is in facing this together that we find a dimension of our collective intelligence. I have a poem for that. This is from my friend and colleague, Anita Barrows, who talks about her poetic lines capture much better than my assertions how necessary it is to be with each other when we look and try to take in what is happening to our world. And I would travel with you to the places of our shame, the hills stripped of trees, the marsh grasses oil-slicked, steeped in sewage, the blackened shoreline, the chemical-poisoned water. I would stand with you in the desolate places, the charred places, soil where nothing will ever grow, pitted desert, fields that burn slowly for months, roots of cholla and chaparral writhing with underground explosions. I would put my hand there with yours. I would take your hand. I would walk with you through carefully planted fields, rows of leafy vegetables drifting with radioactive dust, through the dark of uranium mines hidden in the sacred gold-red mountains. I would listen with you in drafty hospital corridors as the miner cried out in the first language of pain, as he cried out the forgotten names of his mother. I would stand next to you. I would stand next to you in the forest's final hour, in the wind of helicopter blades, police sirens shrieking, the delicate tremor of light between leaves for the last time. Oh, I would touch with this love each wounded place. We can do that together. And when we do, something comes into being. A kind of sanity that stretches beyond our separate personhood. Something that we've been yearning for as our spirits feel together the courage of looking at what must be seen and knowing that we can do that together, that not one of us has the strength to do it alone. Well, that's the way it seems to me. Excuse me, I don't mean to put you down if you think you do, but at any rate, this has been the journey that I've been on since that weekend, Memorial Day weekend, 44 years ago. And particularly in the last 38 years, in the arise generating of a group work together with other people. And as we have done this over the years, the journey we have taken when we sit down together to work, when we run together to work, when we dance together to work, but always together, speaking or in silence, has come to follow a certain plot line. We call it a spiral. It is a journey that we take that goes through, it's a spiral that goes through four stations. And these four stations, we begin with gratitude, and then when that gratitude, which is our birthright to feel glad to be alive, and grounds us, then we have the strength to look at the pain that we feel in our heart minds for our world, and to share what we see, and to speak together about what our hearts and minds feel, what is being disclosed to us. And then, as we do that, and finding our capacity to suffer with our world, which is the literal meaning of compassion, to suffer with. And then as that is something that we find arises naturally in us, because we're all bodhisattvas, whether you want to you don't need to study Buddhism to know that that openness, that quality of love for life, that birth's courage and delight, is part of the sap, the medicine that can heal our world and ourselves. And then we turn, the third station is seeing with new eyes. And there we come to understand in fresh ways the deep ecology of our lives, the eco-psychology resources that are for us now, and the deep time, the collectivity with our ancestors and future beings. And then the fourth station is going forth to see just where we have the capacity and the appetite to bring fresh energy and vision into the communities where we live and work. We call this journey a spiral, rather than a cycle, because each time you come through these, and I'm going to be tracing these this weekend in the other talks I give. But because each time you go through the spiral, it opens up, and you see new things. And that reminds me of another poem. You're going to have to get used to my bringing poetry in, because that, when you hear a poem, then you realize you already know what I'm talking about. I live my life in widening circles that reach out across the world. I may not complete this last one, but I give myself to it. I circle around God, that primordial tower. And I've been circling for thousands of years, and I still don't know. Am I a falcon, a storm, or a great song? How good it is now to be at a point in our human journey when we feel our relatedness and are summoned to feel our relatedness with all that is. And we either do that or we sink. So I'd like to, that first one, I'd like to just say a few words about gratitude for in this evening. And as the anthropologists point out, every earth faith tradition begins with gratitude. They all start there with that kind of primal, wow, get a load of this. Hands, hair, piece of hair, light, ground. This world. I'm here. And we're called again and again to be glad we're alive. And if we can't touch into that foundational being glad you're alive, then you might as well just stay home. And how wonderful it is for us on this continent, Turtle Island, to have indigenous communities, First Nation people, to whom Thanksgiving has been so important. Especially near where my ancestors are from, in Central New York State, and on up New York and into Ontario, the Haudenosaunee Six Nation Confederacy, and how they talk about the words that come before all else. Those are the words of Thanksgiving. And I love when I hear them doing it. You know, for all the generations, these were never written down. But now in our lifetime, they are being written down so that we all can benefit from them. Jake Swamp of the Mohawks was, I think, the first to do that. And then when we hear them and we see these words that come before all else, the words of them as they think, thank each thing. Thank our older brother, the sun, who rises every morning, so bringing us light so we can see each other's faces and warmth to draw up the seeds. And then, and now our minds are one. You can try that. And now, come on, now our minds are one. Yeah, there's a sort of a gathering that in the act, so it's nice to say thanks, but in the saying thanks for what is essential to life, we achieve what we really ache for also, which is our solidarity with each other. And when I have learned awfully late in my life what these Native people have encountered, when I've learned about the dispossession and the massacres and the humiliation and the theft, when I've heard about those and I see how many lives have been broken, and I see the dignity and self-possession, composure, so beautiful, of those who remain strong, the elders, the leaders. I can see that they've been through a Holocaust, and they've survived it, and I think, I've become convinced that it is this practice of gratitude that has allowed them to survive with this quality of dignity. And I find my hand keep going like this, as if that dignity and that comes, seeing them from this practice, it gives them backbone. And we too are going to go through far harder times than we can imagine. Come on, don't you know that? And so, for our own self-respect and dignity, we too need to be grounded in this sense of we are here, and it is good, right and meet and good that we are here. And if this has to befall our people and our planet, then it is good that we are here. Would you want this to happen to your planet? Well, the things that I've listed and the killings and the weapons and the threats of war and the nuclear buildup, would you want that to happen and you have checked out? Would you? Yeah, you're here. And so we can take a pride in us that we are here and that we can, and that is in our capacity, our birthright to give thanks. And then it is also helps us to know that gratitude in our political economy of today is a revolutionary act. Because late stage capitalism requires, and the consumer society requires us to feel dissatisfaction. Have you noticed? You have to feel insufficient. You don't look right, you don't smell right, you don't drive the right kind of car. And so this planting of this not good enough, that craving, which in Buddhism is the source of suffering, is actually necessary for the industrial growth society. So to practice gratitude is not just a little nice Pollyanna thing, you know, it's better to be cheerful, isn't it? No, it's revolutionary. So it's that gratitude is also, you can trace it at the beginning of so many other religions. In Tibetan Buddhism, the first reflection you make before a period of intensive practice is to reflect to yourself how rare and precious is a human life. And you think about that. There are ways that images that you can employ to show how very, particularly given all the microbial, bacterial forms of life, that you should show up in this incarnation as a human. Wow, that is amazing. You could have been a paramecium or something, but you are a human. It's very complex. And so you become aware, you teach yourself to recognize how rare is a human life. But then what do they mean by how precious? Why is a human life so precious? Is it because it's superior to other life forms? No, it's not. That's not in the thing. It's for one reason, because all the other realms of beings don't have this, but humans do. And what is it? Humans can change the karma. In other words, humans can choose where they're going to put their attention and what they're going to do. They can't always choose how it's going to work out, but you can choose. For example, you can choose where you put your mind right now. And I'm really grateful that most of you are putting your mind on listening to me. I'm so grateful for that. That helps me keep talking. But at any rate, this capacity to choose is a wondrous thing. And now, Lorraine mentioned one of my two most recent books. And the one, Active Hope, How to Face the Mess We're In Without Going Crazy, was very important for me to write. All my books of the last decade have been, most of them, not all, but most, have been written with other people. I strongly recommend that. If you're thinking of writing a book, do it with someone else. It's much more enjoyable. You don't get on your own case. You don't get so depressed and ready to slit your throat because you can't think of the next thing to say and it's just too much for you. It's so great to do it. And then you have synergy when you think together. and emergent properties and new ideas. Well,